It's time for the Ron and Brian podcast. Get ready to fill your ears with the latest news, politics, current events, and whatever else we feel like talking about this week. And now, your hosts, Ron and Brian.
And good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Ron and Brian podcast, episode 156. It is going to be a good night, Brian. I just have that feeling.
You think it's going to be a good night? How do you feel? You think this is going to be a good night, Ron?
I think it might be. More importantly, how are you doing tonight?
Splendid. Absolutely wonderful. I think I've got all my faculties. I've got 10 fingers. I've got 10 toes. The link to the After Dark has been sent to our Patreon subscribers, so I know they're all going to be happy. And other than that, I'm feeling blessed.
All right. Well, then let's get rolling right into it.
Drink of the week.
Drobia.
Salud.
Drink of the week.
Sláinte.
Drink of the week. Drink of the week.
All right, Brian, you are pouring. You are prepared. What did you bring to the table this week?
What do you think when I say Shrewsbury Lager?
I think of the Shrewsbury trees that we used to climb when we were younger.
You know what? I'm so ignorant that I'm not sure if that's true or not.
Anyway, talk about your beer, my friend.
Well, coming from Ross Brewing Company, you know that they're friends of the show, Jersey Brewers themselves. This is their flagship lager. It's inspired by the river and the trees that go right next to it in their hometown of Red Bank. It's low in bitterness. It's high in malt character and complexity with the subtle use of hops, which makes a balancing and refreshing lager with a crisp, dry finish, perfect for drinking on a boat, a beach, a deck, or a podcast.
Well, very well done description. Take a well-earned sip and tell me what you think of it.
Oh,
that good, huh?
I have to get off this IPA nonsense crap. I got to stick to lagers and pilsners. It's my jam.
All right. Brian, this week I dug into the beer cellar because I knew this was going to be a special episode. So I got one of my cellared cans. This is from McKellar Brewing in San Diego. This is their Beer Geek series. It is their vanilla shake. It is an imperial stout with coffee and vanilla. I mean, take a look at this thing. It is dark like night. It is a solid.
Like the color of my shirt.
It's a solid. Wait for it, Brian. Solid 12% on this one. Oh, it's going to be a good time, especially in After Dark. So let me just take a sip here.
Ron, we are going to be talking about...
You can taste the alcohol in that, but it is nice. It is...
After Dark will be filled with nothing but tales of digital penetration.
I suppose possibly so. All right. Well, we got our drinks here. You know what comes next. That's right.
This...
week
in
racism.
Well, Brian, I was able to keep the font at 12 and just slightly under two pages of racism. So let's get into it. Yes.
Do you think that the fewer acts of racism this week are due primarily to the fact that most of the racists were not able to drive as easily due to the high price of gasoline?
It's very possible. I'm willing to take that as a thought. But let's get right into this. Starting off, a former prosecutor in Texas was disbarred after it was found he had withheld evidence that would have likely prevented two black men from spending 14 years in prison after being wrongfully convicted. Rick Jackson surrendered his license to practice law last month after the state bar found that he failed to provide defense attorneys with evidence that would have possibly prevented Dennis Allen and Stanley Mosey from being found guilty in their capital murder case in 2000. Allen and Mosey were released from prison in 2014 after the Dallas County District Attorney's Office found the men were wrongfully convicted as a result of prosecutorial misconduct. Butchered that one. 5 years later, DNA testing led the men to being declared actually innocent. in New York. A group of parents are outraged after their children were given an assignment that said George Floyd died from a heart attack and not a knee on his neck. The assignment was given to students at Saugerties High School and asked them to craft a bold thematic statement in the same format as state exams by using the examples provided. One of the examples stated that Floyd didn't die from Derek Chauvin's knee on his neck, but instead from a heart attack. It also made statements about a Chauvin trial juror potentially having, quote, racially provoked attitudes towards policing and Black Lives Matter. School District Superintendent Kirk Reinhart issued a statement that said the district is currently reviewing the assignment. A 16-year-old high school student in Fairfield, Connecticut, was arrested last week over a racist Snapchat post allegedly directed at another student. The unidentified student at Fairfield Ward High School was arrested after police were called to the school on May 7th and charged with ridicule on account of creed, religion, color, denomination, nationality, or race, as well as second-degree breach of peace. The teen is accused of posting a photo on Snapchat that included a Black male classmate and a racial slur directed at the classmate. School officials and police are still investigating the incident, and the principal of the school has announced the creation of a new organization to address racism and other forms of discrimination. A North Carolina judge received a summons to appear in criminal court after he was accused of nearly hitting Black Lives Matter protesters with his SUV. Cumberland County Judge John M. Tyson has been charged with assault with a deadly weapon and will have to go to court in his own county to answer for his alleged crime. Activist Maya Warren said that she believes Tyson was intentionally trying to harm protesters based on his track record as a judge. He's a well-known racist, she said, referring to a case in which Tyson rejected the notion of race being a factor in the killing of a Black man who was fatally struck by a white man's shotgun at a 2016 party. A Michigan man has filed a lawsuit against the police after a violent arrest in March 2019. Thurman King was driving home from work when he was pulled over by Rockford police officers Zachary Abate and Jason Bradley. The officers told King they had pulled him over for running a stop sign, a claim that the officers' dash cam footage would later show was false. King would eventually be tackled, kneeled on, handcuffed, and arrested. After Kent County prosecutors reviewed dash cam footage of the arrest, they dismissed all charges. King's lawsuit seeks reimbursement for lost wages due to the arrest, as well as fines and fees incurred prior to the charges being dismissed. And then this is probably the biggest story this week. Body cam footage was leaked this week, shedding light on what really happened in the death of Ronald Green in May 2019 while being arrested by Louisiana state troopers. Police officials initially claimed that Green died on impact after his car crashed into a tree, but later released a statement saying that Green got into an altercation with officers and died en route to the hospital. In the 46-minute clip, Green is subjected to multiple tasers. At one point, a trooper puts Green in a chokehold and punches him in the face, while another can be heard calling him a, quote, stupid motherfucker. After handcuffing Green, the troopers left him face down and unattended for 9 minutes, despite protocol being to put people on their side to prevent breathing issues. After a several-minute stretch in which Green is not seen on camera, he appears again, limp, unresponsive, and bleeding from his head and face. He is then loaded onto an ambulance gurney, his arm cuffed to the bed rail. Trooper Dakota DeMoss, Trooper Corey York, and Master Trooper Chris Hollingsworth were all seen in the footage participating to some degree. DeMoss and Hollingsworth approached Green's SUV after he pulled over and repeatedly tased him. York was seen grabbing Green by his ankles and dragging him while he was handcuffed. In a separate recording, Hollingsworth could be heard bragging to a colleague that he, quote, beat the ever-loving fuck out of Green. Shortly after being informed that he would be fired for his role in Green's case, Hollingsworth died in a single vehicle crash. York was suspended for a week without pay for turning off his body camera and dragging Green, while DeMoss was later arrested for his role in a similar incident where he allegedly used excessive force when arresting a motorist. The troopers belong to Troop F, which is the same troop as Trooper Jacob Brown, who was arrested and charged last December for the beating of Aaron Bowman during his arrest, which also occurred in May 2019. Bowman survived the attack and has filed a lawsuit against Louisiana State Police. And we told a story many weeks back about the stories of systematic racism within Louisiana State Police. And I believe they have hit This Week in Racism pretty much every week since then.
That's a truly awful story.
Yes. No, it's horrible. And the footage, if you watch it, is very disturbing as well.
When it's public?
The footage that was leaked is available to the public. It was on the news. And Louisiana State Police, the only statement they made is that they were just upset that the footage was leaked.
No, why would they be upset at their police officers?
Of course. And we do have a couple of rewind stories as well.
Racism Rewind.
All right. Last week, we discussed Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt and him signing a bill into law preventing the teaching of critical race theory in schools. As a result of that, the Tulsa Race Massacre Centennial Commission announced Friday that they have removed him from his seat on the panel. They had made statements prior to him signing that they were unhappy with his actions and put those into action. And then in a follow-up to the killing of Dante Wright last month by former Minnesota police officer Kim Porter, a judge ruled on Monday that Porter will stand trial after finding that there was probable cause to charge the officer with second-degree murder. The judge told the court that she would like Porter's trial to begin by December 6th. If Porter is found guilty, she could face up to 10 years in prison. Porter, of course, the police officer that mistook her taser for a gun, firing and killing Dante Wright.
Wow.
A shorter amount of racism, but still a fairly horrible list of stories.
I'm still three stories back.
You're processing. Yeah,
40-minute long videotape. That's awful.
Yeah.
Disgusting.
All right, let's move on with Beef of the Week.
Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
I would just like to say first, I clocked in at 7 minutes, 14 seconds. About 3 less minutes of racism this week. Brian, what's your beef?
My beef this week is Republican House of Representative politician Andrew Clyde from Georgia.
Okay.
And it's not necessarily him per se, but it really is the political culture at this moment. He was in the news this week. He is part of the House Oversight Committee, and they were having a hearing to debate whether we should have a congressional investigation into the actions of people involved in the January 6th storming of the Capitol. The insurrection, if you would, and Representative Clyde took a very a creative stance in remembering what took place that day. So during his couple minutes during the committee, he took the opportunity to say that he did not feel that investigation was needed. He said that he felt there was no insurrection had taken place. He then said that it actually resembled a normal tourist visit, and that he could see during some of the video footage that a lot of the people that had entered the Capitol were actually just, you know, taking pictures as normal tourists would. He was ripped to shreds in the press afterwards, as a photo was immediately shared publicly on Twitter of the same Republican Representative Andrew Clyde helping others press a piece of furniture against the chamber doors in the House to prevent the people that had invaded the building from breaking through.
I did see that with a look of fear on his face also.
It is this climate that you can basically say anything you want in politics nowadays, regardless of what the truth is, regardless of what the evidence is, and simply just say, this is my story, this is my belief, and there's not a damn thing you can do to convince me otherwise. it used to be that if somebody were to walk out and it's raining and say it's wet, and somebody else would say, yes, it is wet. Now we live in this world where someone can sit there and say, no, it's not raining. Meanwhile, they're holding an umbrella getting soaked. Nope, it's not raining. That's not what I want to. I don't want to believe this. So therefore, I'm going to say whatever I have to back up my belief. It's absolutely insulting to the American public. That's my beef.
I feel your beef is much more serious than mine this week. My beef is it's allergy season, and I'm stuffed up and I'm cranky. Yours, you take the cake this week. You take the beefcake this week, as you often do.
I tend to. What are your symptoms?
Stuffy nose, sore throat, the usual.
Anal leakage?
No, not this time around.
That's your fall allergies. I forgot.
That's leaves and whatnot. Well, forget beefs. We have a very exciting evening ahead of us. We've got a very special guest that we are excited to have joining the show from iconic hip hop group Tag Team. Let's bring him in right now and welcome DC Glenn, the Brain Supreme. Right. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Guys are kind of spicy this evening.
Are we?
Just a tad.
What are you more used to?
Hey man, I can roll with anything. That's the beauty of life.
That's what we're looking for.
Adaptability, right? So it doesn't even matter. It's all about you guys. How you doing?
It's good. We got some questions here. Obviously, you guys were huge. 1993. The single drops, one of the highest selling singles in the history of America, 4 times platinum, number 2 on the Billboard 100 for 7 weeks. And now you're being reintroduced to a new generation through this Geico commercial. How surreal is this whole experience?
Everybody asks me that same question and I tell them the same thing. Not at all. I have always been even keel about this whole thing. I don't act like a star. I never have. And I'm happy. You know what I mean? But for me, the funnest part of all this is the hustle and everything that I'm getting because of the work that I'm putting in, the work that I've been putting in for years to be successful, right? And it's amazing that, I understand why people say this is a story of redemption and Tag Team is back in the limelight and all this and all that. And I get that, and that's fine. But for me, this is a story of tenaciousness. This is a story of hard work, story of never giving up, a story of steadfastness, a story of perseverance, a story of doing whatever it takes to live your dreams and not listening to anybody and getting the knowledge and doing the things and keeping the discipline and learning to fight through anything to get what you want. And that's my story. But I understand people say they're back in the limelight. Okay, we're back in the limelight. It's okay. there's a reason I answer that question like that. And it's because I have been hustling since I was a kid, right? I had paper routes. I had jobs since I was 8 years old, and I don't fear work. So to me, I am always going to look at the positive things in life. And I've acquired the ability over the years to take any negative emotion, hate, envy, disgust, despair, put it in my pocket, don't react, and use it for fuel later. I don't mean to get deep on you guys early, but that's what it
takes. We want it. The deeper, the better. What were you back in the 90s? This mm-hmm. song comes across your plate. Where are you in life at this moment? Are you actively in music? Do you see yourself that stardom is one step away?
Let me tell you about my life. All right. Me and Steve met in high school, right? And I went to a Catholic high school in the 10th grade. Then I went to a public high school. And in homeroom, we sat by each other because both our last names started with a G. And we became friends. And Steve had a band. And they used to play during in the quad, you know, during lunchtime every now and then. And I was like, I got to be in that band. And I was working in the Tardy office, and down the hall was Dr. Joyce Davis, who conducted the choir, Bolt Vibration, in Manual High School in Denver, Colorado. And I was like, I got to be in that choir. And then our first high school dance, some of Steve's friends came and DJed. And I was like, oh, my God, this is the first time I've ever seen two record players. What's that thing in the middle, a mixer? It's like, those are the DJs. I'm like, oh, my God, I got to be a DJ. And all those three things right there changed my life. I got in Steve's band. I got in the choir. And I became a DJ. And I've been DJing for 35 years, right? And I just honed my craft in all three of those things. And those were the things I love. And this is at the beginning of hip hop. So it's all valid. It's all the things that we all were doing. We're basically caveman producing. You know what I mean? We're making songs with pots and pans and whistles and beatboxing, whatever we could do, two turntables and a microphone. And that was the most glorious time ever, because it was from scratch. It was organic.
Yeah.
Real. Right. And, you know, I go to college, Sac State University, and I get better at it. I start DJing all the frat parties. I start singing. I start rapping. Our band disbanded because, you know, young men grow older and everybody goes their separate ways. Me and Steve stayed together and we started making songs and became tag team. And we just honed our craft. And Steve went to Atlanta to go to school at the Art Institute. I came down to visit him, lost my mind. I went back and packed up and came right down to Atlanta. And I had a job at CNN, but they took me to a club called Magic City, which is one of the world's premier adult entertainment complexes. And the DJ was having a real bad night that evening. And I was like, wait a minute, I could DJ here. And I ended up getting a job at a strip club, and the owner had a regular club. And now you ask me what my life was. I am the head DJ of a club that has 150 beautiful women walking around butt naked, and I am 22 years old. And I am the hottest DJ in the city. And I'm friends with Deion Sanders and Dominique Wilkins and Babyface in LA and Bobby Brown, because they all come to the club and I'm the DJ. So for me, all the stardom stuff doesn't apply, because I was already a popular DJ and I watched people rise and fall, and I watched people revel in their demise. And I said, I will never be that dude. And I, you know, and another thing the club did for me is that it liberated me as a man, right? Because chasing booty wasn't the most important thing anymore, right? It was about getting the money. It was about the hustle. It was about the tactics. It was about all those things that me and my girls did together to get the money. And that's where the music started growing, because I'm in a club where I get to play my own songs. What's better than that, right? And then the girls love the song. So then, you know, I realized we're in the Southeast. We're in the land of booty shake, bass music. And back then it was only two sides. It was, you know, Los Angeles and New York. They controlled hip hop. So we made hip hop, but we were in the Southeast and they made bass music in the Southeast. So I had, you know, I went to Steve. I said, hey, we have got to make an up-tempo record. And we made Whoomp, There It Is. And everybody thinks it's this big Manhattan project. And it was just a song about guys chasing women on a Friday night. Like most country songs and most songs about, you know, that men make, period. It was a song, right? It wasn't anything that you would think that you had to put a lot into, because we had hundreds of songs. And we made the song. I had to go to work that night. I put the cassette in. And to this day, it is the biggest response on any record I have ever had. And I've been DJing for 35 years.
Well, and the phrase Whoomp, There It Is came from the strip club, correct?
It was a party saying. It was like, throw your hands in the air, waving like you just don't care. So when, you know, a party saying or a phrase like, where's the beef, whatever, it starts going around, naturally people might start trying to make a song of it. And just so happened that everybody wanted to make a Whoomp, There It Is song. But we did it. And because I had friends, when we dropped it, the one thing that blew it up was after I left Magic City and we had dropped, you know, record signed a record record contract, and they dropped the record. Ed Lover was a good friend of mine, and they used to do Yo MTV Raps at 4 o'clock.
Dr. Trey. Yep.
And he was like, "What is that record?" This was like 2 weeks before I left the club. And I was like, "That's my new record, man." He was like, "Man, give me that." I gave him a cassette. He's like, "I can't do nothing with no cassette." Right? He's like, "I need
needs vinyl. A video."
No, he needed vinyl, right?
Yeah.
And because him and Dre used to play records while they were talking and then play video, then have the guests on, right? So he wanted vinyl. So I said, "I'm gonna get you vinyl." And about 3 weeks later, he came back and I met him down at the club, gave him his vinyl. And then that Monday, he played Whoomp There It Is, the entire show of Yo MTV Raps.
On no MTV. Way.
V. That's the first time. That's the first thing that blew it up. Then the second thing, 2 weeks later, the Bulls win their third championship.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got 500,000 people in Grand Park with the Bulls on stage chanting Whoomp There It Is on WGN. And if you remember, WGN was a national...
It was.
Like TBS. That's why everybody loves Cubs and they love the Braves to this day. And the whole nation saw everybody singing, Whoomp, There It Is, and then we were gone. And after we signed the contract, I left in probably like the last week of March. Within a month and a half, we were platinum. And the rest is history.
Great. Now, you talk about, you know, coming up through the starts of hip-hop. Earlier today in the Bronx, they had the groundbreaking for the Universal Hip Hop Museum in the Bronx that's going to be built. How does it feel having come up, you know, through the birth of hip hop, seeing something like this, long overdue, in my opinion, starting to come to life in the Bronx?
I mean, it's just one of those things that happens, right? I mean, people, you know, as we get older, certain people get recognized for their accomplishments. Certain places get recognized for their accomplishments. And if you keep fighting and you keep working and keep learning, you know, it's never over, right? It's never over. And, you know, that being from the beginning of hip hop, I understand that was what it was back then. So I often get in arguments with the older cats because they think that the young people should pay homage to the older cats. But I'm like, they don't even know how to do that. What are you talking about? They weren't even born back then. They have no responsibility to us. I said, if anything, we have a responsibility to them, right? And that's how I take it. And that's why I try to help people wherever I can. And I don't tell them about, you know, people come ask me, they say, well, what I got to do? And I'm like, I'm going to give you a folder with a book in it. Read that book and come back and holler at me. And 98% of people don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But the people that do come back and they're confused and bewildered. And then I explain it to them because I know they put in the effort. And they're like, well, okay, but how does that help me? And I'm like, because they're thinking stardom, right? But I'm thinking I am now confident that you will never get taken advantage of in the music industry like I did. And I gave you the back end first instead of the front end. The front end is the stardom and the girls and the cars and all that crap. But that ends, and it ends crashing down. And you, if you're not strong, you'll never survive. So I give you the back end. So when all that happens, what do you have at the end? You have your music publishing where you can license your song forever. It basically is a pension plan, right? And
that's where the money is.
And they still don't understand it because they want to be stars. Everybody wants that instant gratification. But I've done my part, right? I've given you the game. And even if somebody had told me that back in the day, you know, they say youth is wasted on the young. I would have been like, okay, but I still would have did what I did. Because we are young and you think you rule the world and it feels good, right? But because we got in a legal situation, I didn't quit. And I didn't become bitter. I looked at the glass half full as opposed to half empty. And I knew that we had a forever hit record because I'm looking at Will Ferrell dance on a table to my song in Elf. So now I know Whoomp, There It Is, evergreen. It's my responsibility to get my money, just like it was in the club. And I've developed tactics over the years to always be able to make money because I'm a hustler. I love work. I love it to be hard because I know nobody else is going to want to do it. And all you got to do is just not quit. It's that simple.
And the thing is, you guys didn't quit. You know, a lot of people are saying, oh, you know, you came out with this hit in the 90s. We're seeing you now again with this recent Geico ad, which we'll address in a second. But in so many ways, you know, you continued working and performing, yeah. You know, for the past 20 years. It's not as if you guys decided to, you know, retire to an old age home and drink lemonade on a porch.
No, man.
You guys have been performing to arenas, to theaters.
Yeah, NFL halftime shows and NBA halftime shows. Do 5 or 6 of those a year, and they're very lucrative.
I would imagine those are.
Yeah. And all we got to do is go sing the song, right? And, I mean, I've been very blessed. And, you know, we were caught up in a legal battle, right? The record company went bankrupt. Another record company bought it out of bankruptcy, but they took something that wasn't supposed to be there. So now both record companies are fighting each other. I can fight one record company, but I can't fight two. So I decided, hey, man, become a paralegal. So you can always get all the discovery. You can start building your case as you go along, because this is going to take a while, but you will have your day in court. Now, all I did was organize everything. I kept up on the cases. I kept up on every piece of paperwork, every motion that they filed, every case that they had to litigate to get to another point, And I had all this discovery. And that's what I did for 20 years. Right. And I'm glad I did it because I'm different. I think differently, man. I'm not going to be sitting here with a pity party and like, man, I can't believe I signed that contract. And I'm not going to do that. There's enough stuff to beat yourself up about, you know, the things that you've done in life. And even then you get to live long enough and you get to, you know, you hustle long enough and you learn some things. You realize that there are no mistakes and there are no missed opportunities. Sometimes you're just not ready, right? Sometimes you're just not ready. And I look back on all the things I used to beat myself on. I'm like, you're doing all those things now. I'm an actor. I'm a voice artist. I'm an SEO specialist. I was a licensed commodities broker. I was a marketing manager of the club that I was at. And the marketing manager of the club, I'm more than just a DJ. I'm your light guy. I'm your sound tech. I do your flyers. I do your graphics. I do your radio ads. I do your voiceover. I do your television ads. I do everything. I make myself invaluable, because making yourself invaluable is what teaches you and gives you the tools to get to the next thing. Like, people are in dead-end jobs and can't stand their jobs. I tell them, like, you better learn everything you can and do extra as much as you can in that job that you can't stand, so you can get the knowledge you need to keep moving to the next thing. And you won't get fired because you're invaluable, because you know how to do things. You know how to do every job. You know how to do things that nobody else knows how to do. And you've innovated. And now they can't live without you. It's just a simple thinking approach, and it requires work.
Yes.
I do all that extra work. I was like, okay, well, you're going to sit and suffer while I'm
That's called work ethic.
That's work ethic. And then all these things that I'm doing while I'm the marketing manager, I start liking. I was like, hey, I like voiceover. Let me start training for voiceover for real, because I want to be the voice of this Wednesday on NBC. That's what I want to be. Right.
Right.
And that's what I am now. You see what I'm saying? Like, all these things that everybody's telling me, well, you ain't making no money doing it. Well, you got your tentacles all over the place. Well, you know, you live long enough, all those tentacles become one and they serve you. And they tell you to tell me, DC, you're jack of all trades, master of none. Yeah. But if you live long enough, hustle hard enough, don't quit, and learn how to learn those same trades, you become masterful at, and they all serve you, right? And they elevate you in ways you never could have imagined, because when you plant seeds, you don't know what type of seeds you planted. You don't just sit there and be like, okay, seed, grow. Oh, wait a minute, this seed don't work. I quit. We all know people like that. Somebody say, I'm gonna take a class and I'm gonna be this. What happened to that class? Well, it wasn't for me, right? And that's not me. I'm going to ride to the wheels fall off. When I started voiceover, it was hard. I thought I could whoop there it is my way through anything. Right. But, and it was, I just let it be hard. It was difficult. It still is hard. Right. But I didn't quit. I didn't quit. I kept grinding. And, you know, fast forward to the pandemic, everybody had to stop at the same time. And I'm like, what am I going to do? And I said, I can't do shows, can't do this, can't do that. But I can get up out the bed every day in my drawers and come over here and make some money on this thing. Right. Mm-hmm. And I reinvented myself with voiceover. And I started booking instantly. But not only that, I was already an actor. I'm a voice artist. I've got one of the biggest agents in the Southeast. I'm grinding. I'm going to class every day. I'm doing whatever it takes. And all of a sudden, back a year ago in April, when everybody thought we were all going to turn into zombies and start eating each other, I get a call from my agent, from my acting coach saying, hey, I got a movie for you. I'm casting this movie. Can you travel to Nebraska? Like, yeah, I got a hazmat suit. I'm good. And went to Nebraska, shot my first movie called
Awesome.
Not only is it a movie, it's a documentary about shooting a movie in the age of Corona. 2 months later, I get another movie. And then I book a fall campaign for voiceover for Publix. And then I book a Tyler Perry House of Pain episode. And then here comes Geico. All this in 2020.
Wow.
Pandemic is the greatest thing that ever happened to me. 2020 is the best year of my life because I didn't quit. I played offense. I kept it moving, right? And Geico calls me. And because I do SEO, and I'm good at it. 10 years ago, I started. You type in tag team, it was all wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Tag team today is all tag team.
Yes. And
I get a call from my agent. You guys just booked a Geico commercial. It's like, why are you playing with my emotions? I did not even audition for a Geico commercial. Like, no, DC, they said they wanted tag team. I was like, oh, yeah, tag team. And I went and checked the phone because we have the number, a dedicated line, and there was a message. And because I lay good breadcrumbs all over this planet for people to find me so I can get this money, they found my IMDb, called my agent, and I let my agent make the deal. You're talking about synergy. And it's the most lucrative deal I've made in my life.
Oh, I can imagine. That's Geico money. That's Geico money. That right? is Geico money.
Not only is it Geico money, but it is, you know, an actor talk. It is a SAG national commercial. And not only is it a SAG national commercial, it is a hit commercial. There's a difference.
It's getting heavy airplay.
Oh, absolutely.
Airplay. You get paid every single time.
Yep.
If that happens. They have certain contracts. They have different levels. And you get paid. Before we got on this podcast, I looked at another statement. I get statements 2-3 times a week. Right?
That's good. That's good.
A month and a half ago. Right. Yeah. And 3 weeks ago, I was the grand marshal for the Talladega 500 NASCAR. What?
That's awesome.
You see what I'm saying? And,
you
know, this experience was hard because usually when you get a Geico commercial like Salt and Pepper did in 2014, you're off to the races and you're touring forever. And they've been touring till the pandemic, but we're not going to tour, but I'm not about to sit back and be happy I got a Geico commercial. I'm going to take these lemons. I'm going to make me a lemonade company. I'm going to franchise it, and I'm going to sell it for $20 million. That's my mindset. So I said, well, let me get a publicist, right? And I'm trying to find a publicist, and all these publicists are like, we've never done this before. We're working from home. They gave me every reason why they shouldn't instead of one reason why they should. And I said, thank you. It's cool. And whenever I get stuck like that, this is one of my tactics, learn how to learn. I join an organization, society, or association because they're filled with people who are in a profession that have been doing it for 10, 20, 30, 40 years, and they have an expertise above all, and they want their profession to be better and more innovative as they get older. And I joined the Public Relations Society of America. 2 days in, I'm on a Zoom call with the CEO of this PR firm. I'm like, raise my hand. Are press releases relevant? What's it for, DC? Well, I'm kind of featured in a Geico commercial called Scoop. There it is. I'm looking at the chat. It's like, no, wait a minute. That can't be him. I love that commercial. My kids love that commercial. My dog loves that commercial. Great commercial, dude. And I blew up the whole Zoom call, right? And the moderator goes, "We're going to talk about that Geico commercial. Welcome to the organization, DC." But back to DC question, is it relevant? Our press release is relevant. The CEO's like, yes, because the whole last year has been COVID, yeah. Right? Every story's been COVID. Every story's been political. Every story's been us fighting and all this stupid stuff and unreality and everything. And then here you guys come throwing sprinkles, spinning scoops, dancing and smiling. DC, your smile. And you just bringing joy to the world. And she's like, yes, that press release is going to work. And not only that press release going to work, you can go here for all the publicists. You're going to go here for the TV talk shows. You're going to go here for the to get in front of the journalists. You're going to go here for the podcast. You're going to make sure your pitches are straight. And she gave me the entire breadth of her existence as a publicist in 10 minutes. And I have not looked back. And it has opened doors and done things for me I could have never imagined because I didn't quit. I kept playing offense. And I learned how to learn. And it is the reason that you and I are talking right now.
Absolutely.
I didn't give up. I changed it. I found a way. And that's what everybody can do, especially now because everything is brand new.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be the way it used to be. We're at the foothills of the Rockies. And there's a reason they say there's gold in them dar hills. Right? There's a reason they say that. Right. And that's how I feel about everything. And everything is opening up for me in such a way that I've got three things I want to tell you guys about, but I can't because I'm under a non-disclosure agreement.
That's always a good place to be.
I had a meeting this morning with WWE, right? I signed with one of the biggest voiceover agencies last week, and it's all because I'm dropping these press releases. And not, right. Mm-hmm. And the press releases aren't about press. The press releases are about every time I drop one, 300 entities pull it, and now it's a Trojan horse for me.
Put the work in. Yeah.
I dropped that press release the Wednesday of the Super Bowl. Dan Patrick show calls me on Thursday. I'm on Dan Patrick show on Thursday morning, Friday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about strip clubs. Come on, man. What? Then 2 weeks later, yeah. I'm ABC with Tamron Hall daytime. Come on, man. And then everybody doors just start opening. Then with the Talladega thing and NASCAR, I was like, should I do one? Should I do one? Yeah, this is too big. Do one. I did that 3 days later. I signed one of the biggest voiceover agencies in America. And now, you know, I had a meeting with my agents and they were like, DC, what do you want to do? What kind of roles do you want? I'm like, I'm good. You guys are doing a good job for me. DC, what do you want? You guys are doing a good job. I'm grateful. DC, what is your bucket list? Ah, that's a different question. I said, I want to be in the Mandalorian. I want to be in the Star Wars universe.
Voiceover
or live action. This was in January, right? And I would throw that out in interviews. And now I'm auditioning for Star Wars.
Get out.
I'm doing a demo for The Mandalorian.
That's awesome.
No way.
I didn't expect
that's awesome.
I didn't expect anything from it. It's not a quid pro quo. You don't do things and be like, it's got to work for me. Or I got to have it. I don't even do that. I just do it. I throw it out there. If it comes back, it does. If it doesn't, I keep it moving. And I guarantee you that I am not going to leave this earth regretting that I didn't do something. And that's where the pandemic just changed my whole thinking. That's what Geico did for me.
Yeah.
Changed my whole way of thinking because I do 5 or 6 of these a day. And because I'm so grateful that you guys even had me on, I get to sit here and talk to people. And I get to have ideas and we get to hash things out and we get to inspire each other and listen to each other and figure things out and just marinate in positivity that can make all of our lives better. You see what I'm saying? But you know, if you ain't trying, you got to put in the work. There's no way around it. There's no way under it. There's no way over it. The only way to it is through it.
We're working right now.
I realized that a long time ago, and that's why I am like I am, and I don't mean to get all Anthony Robbins on y'all, but that's just how I am.
Well, I needed this. This is exactly what I needed in my life at this moment. I needed this. Yes.
We can just speak about the voice real quick. I just want to put up a comment from one of our listeners. She says that she's going to have to send the kids to bed early and just listen to you talk. So, I mean, it's a silky smooth voice, no question. And then another listener talking about royalties and WWE. So when ECW was using Whoomp There It Is as a wrestler, Too Cold Scorpio's theme song, I'm assuming that was some good royalty money.
I couldn't even tell you, because there were record companies that were taking that money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now I get a little bit, right? Because there are certain parts of publishing that we do own.
Right.
Chunks I didn't get. And for me to just even keep my sanity, I had to figure out ways to take those emotions and turn them into positivity.
Right. And it sounds like it's paid off. It did. It sounds like it's paid off. Yeah.
It paid off in ways I couldn't ever imagine. And if I didn't do that way, I wouldn't be here standing, you know, ready to just be blessed in a way I could have never imagined. I could have never imagined that this was going to happen like this. And everybody wants to say it's the Geico commercial, but it's not. It's me.
Well, it's the hustle. Work. It's the hustle work. Over yes. all these the years.
Right.
The Geico is the payoff, but laying the groundwork for all these years.
Think about it. Think about all the things that I told you happened before the Geico commercial.
Yeah, that was
already because of my hard work, and now there every day there's something. Mm-hmm. Every day there's something. There's a call. There's this. There's that. We want to put you on ice cream. We want to do this. We want to do that. We want to do this, that, and the other. We're getting shows now that things are opening back up. I got 3 shows today for the money we want. When 2 years ago, I had to fight with people just to get on their roster to say we're doing shows, because they were like, well, you only got 1 song. But I was like, okay, thank you. And when they did that, I went and joined the organization, the International Entertainment Buyers Association. In concerts, you have hierarchy. You got your buyer, you got your stadiums and your arenas, you got your big time promoters, which is Live Nation and Ticketmaster. Then you got your mama pops, the very people that were telling me you only got 1 song, you're not viable. Then you got your managers, then you got me. I joined this organization, went to their convention, 5,000 strong. Me and Chubby Checker, the only black dudes in there. I got a big giant Whoomp There It Is t-shirt on. I got my pitch ready, and I just start networking. My name is DC Glenn. I might have heard of a record called Whoomp There It Is from Tech. Yeah, I heard of that record. What are you guys doing this day? Well, we got a clean 90s rap nostalgia show.
Yeah.
And here's my card. If you need us, cool. And what I did effectively was I cut out the middleman, went where all the people who wanted me. And then there were so many people who wanted me for what I was. They were like, hey, I can use you guys just to plug you in the middle of a show to give it energy so I can make this whole concert series work better. Well, I can use you guys at the Hard Rock Cafe. I can use you guys at the casino. Hey, you want to do a charity event? Hey, now I'm doing shows. Mm-hmm. Now they beg me to be on their roster. Then we end up doing a tour. All because I didn't quit. I thought differently. So joining the organization... You join an organization, anything that you want to do, and you can find out the whole breadth of that organization in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Because you're putting in the effort, there's, you know, you're not paying an agent fee. You're you know, there's fewer hands taking a cut out of your dollar.
Exactly. I get to make the deals. I know everybody in the Martin agency who makes the commercials for Geico. I work with them, and you know, one-on-one. You know, I'm friends with the CEO of one of the biggest marketing agencies in the world. They introduced me to all their brands because they know I do voiceover and I'm an actor.
Now, since you're such good friends with them, do you think they're interested in 2 podcasters from the Northeast who have an interesting take on current events? But, you know, we may not have the same silky smooth voice that you do. But, you know, if you want to drop our name in there, I would not be opposed.
Man, it took me a lot of years to get this voice like
this. Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine.
Okay, I mean, I went back when I reinvented myself. I record everything, right? All the classes, everything. And I had to hear myself talk 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like you hear yourself and you hear little pieces, but I had to hear actual 42-hour sessions of me talking and bullshitting my way through voiceover. Mm-hmm. And it was heartbreaking, right? Because I realized that it was me getting in my own way. I thought it was the teachers and the coaches, and I was being trained by the best. But it was exhilarating because I was like, wait a minute, I know what they're talking about now, right?
Yeah, and sometimes yeah, that moment
to hear something for it to click. And I said, let me do this first voiceover over that's making me cringe and almost throw up in my mouth. Let me do this over. And I did it, and that was the first. It was angelic. It was the first time I had mastery over my voice. And that's, you know, that's when I started. I mean, I started booking like crazy because at that time, everything was, we're all in this together. COVID, right? That's when every commercial was like that.
Right.
Right. And
yeah,
it just set things off in a way that, you know, that was one of the best. That was one of my most brilliant ideas, is just to stop and just say, reinvent yourself. Go back and do it the way you were supposed to do it and the way you know how. And I did. I spent that first couple months doing that, and I have not looked back. And that is what my life is dedicated to doing, is correcting all my mistakes, you know, and correcting all my mistakes and fulfilling all those missed opportunities. And now I've got tutors for everything. I've got tutors for music production. I got tutors for music theory. I got tutors for video editing. Anything I want to learn, anything I want to do, I got a tutor for it, because half of these teachers went back to the schools, and yep, half of them said, I'm not about to go back and be with them nasty ass kids. But what they did is they went and signed up for all of the tutoring sites, all the tutoring sites. So now that same class that they would get $60 a day to teach in a public school, they're getting $60 an hour to teach one student. They changed their whole paradigm.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's gold in them dark hills. I can't say it enough, right?
There's always money out there. There's always money out there.
Now, especially now. And, you know, now I just, you know, I heard what you guys were talking about, right? You know, before. And, you know, I know a lot of people who try to argue with me about things, and I just let them argue, because I love being wrong, right?
Yeah.
Because this is what wrong does, being wrong does for you. First thing it does is that it kills your ego and your pride when you can admit, you know what, I'm wrong, right? And even if I might not be wrong, I'm still gonna say I'm wrong, because it kills my ego, it takes my ego and my pride out of it. Mm-hmm. But we know the people that will argue you down and keep going down that rabbit hole, and that rabbit hole is deep. And then mm-hmm. you're just listening to them tell you things that they know isn't true, but they're doing it just to win the argument. And you let them do it, because now they're so deep in that rabbit hole, that's their reality, and they are truly lost. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing you can do about it. And if you argue with them, you're going to be drugged down right with them, just like a crocodile grabs one of them damn zebra and pulls them underwater. Right.
Avoid negativity. Avoid. I've said it for years. Avoid negativity.
And what you do, you know, being wrong is the path to being right. And you'll never be wrong at that again.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you think differently. Like, everything. Anytime somebody gives me an excuse or gives me a problem, I'm like, thank you, because now I get to make solutions for those excuses and problems. Mm-hmm. Right. There was this girl, she's an actress. She's like, DC, I did this audition and I worked all week and the camera didn't work and I couldn't turn it in. And she was distraught for the whole weekend. I'm like, you're telling me the glass half empty version. What's the glass half full version? Mm-hmm. She's like, what? I'm like, what's the good part? I don't know. Tell me. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, you didn't even think about the solution. I said, the good part is the glass half full part of this is you did the work.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares about that audition? You did the work.
You're better
than you were last week. So anytime people come to me with problems, I ask, what's the solution? Huh? What? They're just bitching. I'm like, what's the solution? You got tons of problems. What's the solution? What are you talking about? And I'm like, look, what I do is I think of the most fantastical, far-fetched, pie-in-the-sky solution, right? And it's there. Almost like if I had said I'm going to be in The Mandalorian and Star Wars, you would have looked at me like I was crazy, right? But you think of that, and that's your vision, and then you work your way back to practicality. Mm-hmm. You make yourself a business plan just by daydreaming. Because you're working your way back. You're not just saying, I want to do this and then nothing happens. You're saying, okay, so what could I do if I come back here? Okay. What does it look like if I'm here? What does it look like? Oh, wait a minute. I'm doing that now. I'm halfway there.
Yeah.
Now you got the other steps you need to get to where you want to be. And that's what I do. And that's why I continue to be successful, you know, just in a simple sense. It's just as simple to keep my sanity and staying away from all that negativity and push forward, because you only get one life and you got a choice. Mm-hmm. That's what people understand. You got a choice. So if you mean to tell me you're going to choose to be like that, you're going to choose to believe some crap that you know is not true and you know better because of power, when you can have all the power you want by being positive and being righteous.
I love it. I absolutely love it. What a great story.
We appreciate you coming on. You've got a website, tagteambackagain.com. What should people be keeping an eye out for right now?
Sprinkle.
We love it. Thank you for joining us.
No, I'm in Philadelphia. They always say Jimmy's here, but I'm with you on the sprinkles.
Exactly. Hey, man. Good. I appreciate you guys. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. We'd love to have you back.
With us. Take care.
Take care.
Thank you.
That was fantastic.
What an awesome interview. Clearly our best interview.
Yeah, without.
I would say that our best interview previous to this, Scott Kingsley.
Yes.
This was just blew Scott Kingsley out of the water. First off, the voice.
As was mentioned by some of our female listeners.
And out of respect, I'm agreeing with it.
I don't even know where we go from here.
Oh, I would like to give one of your... somebody asked, I saw a comment earlier, if we were going to have time to do a What Would Ron Do?
Oh, well, fortunately,
and I just,
there is time for What Would
there
Ron
Do? There is time?
There is
time. I'm so glad.
We've got time.
Okay, I'm so glad. Ron, and as new listeners, new viewers to the podcast every week are... The question is, what is the bit? What is What Would Ron Do? And that is basically, I present Ron with a scenario of something that happened to me over the past week. And Ron tells me how he would have handled it. I think it is fairly well established that I have made some bad decisions in life. My thought process isn't necessarily right.
Not the best at times.
No. Okay. So here is the scenario. I went to visit a friend of mine this weekend who has two dogs.
Okay.
I brought my MacBook Air with me because I thought this, you know, I would need to use my computer at some time over the weekend.
Right.
Whether on the train or whatnot. So... as the night is progressing, he and I come up with the idea that we are going to order UFC 262 pay-per-view.
Makes sense.
However, he has a smart TV, and I can't figure out how to order the pay-per-view on his TV. But he has an Apple TV, and I have an Apple laptop. So I figure I'll order it on my laptop in the web browser, and then I will screen mirror to his television.
Okay, makes sense.
So I, you know, using the magnificent advantages of technology, set that up. We are watching the UFC pay-per-view. I have now placed my laptop on the corner of a coffee table.
Okay. That I feel like this is setting up for disaster, but go ahead.
Yes. However, I want to give you all facts as they are included in it.
Okay.
So parts of the laptop are hanging over the edge of the coffee table. Most of it, and I would say at least 2/3 of the laptop are on the coffee table. The edges are sticking out over it.
Okay.
My friend has a Spuds McKenzie-like dog named Winston. Love this fucking dog. However, he's exactly at the height of where this laptop is on the coffee table. And if you remember Spuds McKenzie, they've got thick heads. Like, these are solid,
solid dog, yes.
So he comes over to me at one point and just starts, you know, sticking his head around. And then he basically does this. Dunk. My laptop goes flying forward, smashing into the corner of the chair that I'm sitting in, and my screen of my MacBook immediately goes blank, with the exception of a star-shaped spot in the center towards the top, which looks like multiple colors of the rainbow. I have now lost my the screen on my laptop.
Okay.
Pretty much ending the night. Wake up the next day. My friend says to me, I feel really bad. Whatever it costs to fix your laptop, you know, just let me know and I'll send you the money. Do you accept this friend's offer, or do you say, nope, my laptop, part of it was sticking out over my responsibility?
I would say if your friend offered to pay for it, I would say, let's go 50-50, equal responsibility here, your dog, me putting it down, knowing you have a dog. I would go 50-50 on that.
All right. Okay.
That's just me.
Thank you.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate it because I will be bringing in my laptop to the Apple store, down the street for me. I will be bringing in on Friday after work, where they will spread apart my butt cheeks. They will take a size 12 butt plug without lube.
Yep.
Just, dust it off and ram it right up my rectum.
It'll be an eye butt plug. It'll be very high tech. What else we got here? We were going to get to the whole Me Too movement going on in the craft beer industry this week.
Can we still do that or no? Because I genuinely don't understand what's going on.
There's a lot involved, so we may have to maybe do it after dark, or maybe we do it next week.
Let's do it after dark.
I think we can touch on it, but I feel it's still going to play out more in the next week. Let's hit celebrity obituaries, and then let's roll on out and prep for after dark.
Okay. Who died?
Well, first of all, poor Spencer Silver, because he was overshadowed by two other deaths. Spencer Silver, in case you did not know, he was the man who invented the adhesive portion of the iconic Post-it note. And he has passed away at the age of 80. But he was, I think, shadowed his passing by the passing of Charles Grodin. Six, star of movies such as Beethoven, Heartbreak Kid. One role I completely had forgotten about until people started to mention, he had a very small role in I Married an Axe Murderer. He was driving the car that Michael Myers' cop friend tried to commandeer towards the end of the movie, and he's like, I need your car. Nope. And like,
I didn't remember that scene because I never saw that movie.
Yeah. And I mean, Charles Grodin, I think, was a very underappreciated comedic actor because he was such a straight man, but he did it in such a funny way.
What was the movie with De Niro?
Midnight Run.
One of my top 20. Right. That movie is so painfully underrated.
And I think what hurt his legacy later on was, remember his talk show he did, which was just god awful. And then
He's too dry for that.
And I was listening to Howard Stern this week for the first time in a long time, specifically because I remember the feud that they were in when he was doing that, when Grodin was doing his talk show, and Howard just would eviscerate him on a daily basis and then go after Howard. And the thing was, like, Howard just idolized him as a comedic actor, but hated him as a talk show host.
Oh, that's a shame.
And then the one that I think stung the most was comedian Paul Mooney passing away from a heart attack at the age of 79. I mean, this is a guy, he wrote for Richard Pryor. He wrote for Red Fox. He was on the Chappelle Show. I mean, he wrote so many things that, and he was someone, he was the epitome of not giving a fuck before not giving a fuck.
Yes.
Became like the thing to do.
And yet he had, such a, I want to say a loyal fan base, It's beyond that. People absolutely worship the ground he walked on because he was so uncompromising with what he wanted to be.
Right.
He would tell jokes that would walk half the room. And the stories you hear, he would get up there and he would literally start targeting people in the audience and they would get up and leave. And once he had felt that he had walked enough of the room and that everyone that had stayed had proven they were worthy of it, that's when he would start doing material.
Right.
Because those were the people he had decided. Those were the people that he felt were worthy of his stand-up. I mean, the balls of that, the confidence of it. How do you not worship that? Right. I mean, we've been doing that on the podcast for about 3 years now.
But I mean, from an acting standpoint, I mean, sure. He was Sam Cooke in the Buddy Holly story. He was Junebug in Spike Lee's Bamboozled. From a writing standpoint, he wrote, you know, Richard Pryor's semi-autobiographical movie, Jojo Dancer, Your Life is Called. Yeah. He wrote for In Living Color. He created the character for Damon Wayans, Homie the Clown. He created that character. One of the most iconic creations in sitcom.
Homie, don't play that.
And then he goes on Chappelle's Show and he does, what did he do? He did Negro Damus was one on, and yep. Ask the Black Man. And
Ask the Black Man was such a genius bit.
Killed. Just absolutely.
Well, killed. I don't think you want to say that he killed because he's actually dead right now. It's a poor choice of words, Rob, but we're going to let you slide on that.
He was the example of a Black man that the system held down because he didn't want to play ball during a time when racism was even heavier than it was today.
Of course.
One of, I would say, top five comedic geniuses of all time.
Yes, and most people will never know his name.
Exactly.
And I don't think he gave a shit.
No, not at all.
He was just like, fuck them. If they don't know me, then they're not worthy of knowing me. But those that do know me, love me. And that is our ethos here on this podcast.
There is a man who literally, you can say, I don't think at any point sold out on any level of his career.
Yeah, would agree on that. Us,
who are more than willing to sell out for hydrogen water, whatever it is.
Ron, I just want to point out that the lip on this can is on this side. So I just sat there drinking like through the back the whole time just so I could point the can towards.
I'm sitting here. And I'm like, wait a minute, is he drinking from the wrong side of the can?
Yeah, just so I could show the label. By the way, people, hydrogen water, next level, NXT, LVL. Ron, what's the affiliate program on that one?
It's on all of our social media. We will probably bump it again. If you go onto our Instagram account, it is in our links in bio on Instagram. In the meantime, we are going to kind of pack this up in a tidy little box. And we are going to get ready.
DC Glenn, I want to thank you for coming on. This was an absolutely, he made this episode a pleasure.
Listen, he, you know, mentions in his write-up that he has done like motivational speaking and things like that. And
I get it. I
certainly understand why. He is extremely engaging. He's got a great voice to listen to. It is definitely a great interview. As Johanna points out, Brian likes to drink from the back. So that will be, I think that'll be something that goes up there with the $900 strip club reference, which
I wanted to ask him and I forgot you as we were talking, as he was talking, I was like, I'll mention this at the end, whether he had any experience while working at strip clubs for customers who were standing at the ATM while the strippers were rubbing their back. What was the move?
I was going to bring it up, but the thought I had was in listening to him describe the level of adult entertainment club that he was working in, like $900 was the average that people dropped. Like if we said, what do you think about a guy that drops $900 at a strip club? You'd be like, he'd be like, that was an average customer at the, at the
sure.
club. So.
Ron, do you want to give a stonk update before we go?
I love the saying, pat that can like it owes you. I like that. For the strip club, pat on the back. I don't want to do a stonk update because the stonk market has been very, very volatile. We have had a couple of green days. I don't want to jinx it. We will perhaps update next week. But in the meantime, again, after dark, if you are a member of
our Join our Patreon. If you're watching right now, go to the RonandBrianPodcast.com. Click the button in the upper right-hand corner. Go to our Patreon. Every week, we do a extra 30, 45, sometimes hour. Once a month, we do something we like to call the pajama party, where we invite all of our Patreons at the silver and higher level. We're talking $10 a month, people, the price for two coffees. All of our silver level Patreons, come on, they join the show. All of us, we have a back and forth. Some of us dress appropriately, some of us don't. But generally, and I'll say this, we save the articles that are somewhat, how would I describe this? Not quite ready for YouTube.
There you go.
The kind of things that, that YouTube might demonetize the podcast for. You know, listen, we're not getting rich off this, but we like to wet our beaks. So if we can get a couple bucks off YouTube, we'll take it. But, you know, stories, you know, like OnlyFans, stories like people having sex with double amputees, things like that. You know, teachers having sex with their students, students having sex with their teachers.
Okay, I think we get the image. And we have also been confirmed for our next pajama party. Yes. Our youngest listener, Athena, guaranteed to be at the next pajama party. So even more reason for you to sign up. We're going to wrap this up right now. A fantastic episode.
I'm clapping you, Ron. I'm clapping you.
Yeah, I'm excited about the way this went down. We are very happy to have had DC Glenn on. We hope you guys enjoyed it. We hope those of you that are listening in the future enjoy it. And I guess that's about all we have to say as we get ready for After Dark. Brian, anything additional before we roll on out of here?
I love you, Ron.
Love you, my friend. We'll catch you after dark.
Thank you for joining us on the Ron and Brian podcast. We're live each week, Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. You can find prior episodes, links to our social media, and everything else Ron and Brian at RonandBrianPodcast.com. See you again next week.